Now entering Nerdist.com.
Stop. It's time for Today We Learned.
Hey, Dan.
Hey, Razzle.
I want to continue singing that song because I'm a huge fan of Jock Jams.
I am also a fan of Jock Jams. And guys, we have an important announcement to
make. Hey, guys.
The podcast is taking a new direction.
Yes.
It's called Today We Jammed. And
yes.
Each day, we're going to talk about a new jockier jam.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Very true.
We are.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
So first up, we've got Quad City DJs.
Yes.
Come on and ride it.
Come on that, and ride it.
Parentheses, that train.
Hey, guys. Sometimes you just want to ride that train.
Come on and ride it. Come on, ride
hey,
that train.
Hey,
we can't
ride
afford
it.
The ASCAP for any
hey,
of this.
What about, give me that donkey button. Though,
hey,
I ain't too hard to beg.
Quad City DJs, I know you're listening. Please don't sue us into oblivion. You're suing the wrong people.
Hey, guys, listen. Quad City DJs.
You want to sue a podcast?
Hey guys.
You should sue the Meltcast.
Quad City DJs, just do me a favor. And don't go on the internet because Meek Mill has been talking shit about you.
Yeah, he said that you make the Quad City DJs, they make Drake look like the Tri-City DJs.
Tri-City DJs! I'm from the Tri-Cities in Michigan, basically.
Oh, yeah?
Saginaw, Maine, and Flint. That's four, but fuck it.
Yeah, we don't talk about that fourth city.
We don't talk
about
it.
It's like
the
black sheep of cities.
We have a great episode today.
Yeah, we have not only a great episode, but
Reach a milestone. 100th
episode. That's a century. 100 years of episodes.
100.
We released one episode a year for 100 years.
Yeah, we just look really good for our age.
Yeah, we all have like horrible Dorian Gray portraits somewhere.
Boy, I'd still fuck mine.
I'd still fuck my portrait. What can I say? I love art.
I love myself so much.
Yeah.
That's a
I
selfie.
Love myself.
That's a, you know, I'm surprised they could do a low-budget Dorian Gray selfie movie where it's just like a selfie.
The selfie of Dorian Gray. It must never be deleted from
my
iPhone
5. And it's on a flip phone. It's been taken on a flip phone. And
man.
it keeps plugged in, and when it gets unplugged, he dies.
My Nokia. I was playing Snake on there.
This is a great 100th episode.
Yeah,
we reached 100 episodes.
Yeah. Every week, I think this is going to be our 100th episode.
Yeah.
But I was wrong every week until now.
Every week, I keep waiting for an email from Nerdist saying we've been canceled.
Yeah, and every week it comes, and I delete it, and I say, oh, I don't know, I never got the email. I guess, can you just put it up?
New phone, who is this?
new podcast, who dis?
Who dis?
And they're like, it's me.
It's us.
Peter Nerdist. You know, of the East Egg Nerdisties.
The East Egg Nerdist Company.
They make Fabergé eggs and sell them to collectors. The new Funko Pop Fabergé egg series, exclusively in Lout Crate.
Huge fan of Louts.
Yeah, exactly. Louts,
Lout Crate.
Goons.
This is Lout
Bozos.
Yahoos.
Love me a Yahoo.
Love me some Yahoos.
And all manner of hooligans.
Hooligans.
Yeah.
This is great. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is fun.
I'm very excited to have this guest in here, not only because he is a prolific actor, writer, producer, director, but he's also one of the people behind one of my favorite podcasts outside of this. And you were actually a guest on it recently.
I was.
I was like, oh, that's amazing. I'm so jealous. That's amazing. It was a great episode, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That podcast is called How Did This Get Made? And Razzle was on the Jupiter Ascending episode, which, if you haven't seen it, is a bonkers movie.
Yeah, don't.
Yeah.
Answer to that. Spoiler alert.
See it with friends that you can so you can make fun of it while you're watching. Don't watch
yes.
it by yourself.
Don't
otherwise, that's
watch
just like
it.
Madness.
Do not watch it by yourself.
Yeah. But yeah, this is a great episode. It was a good episode.
Yeah. Great dudes, great sods.
Yeah, great dudes, great sods,
great dudes.
Cool nodes. Our lymph nodes are sick.
Sick, dude. Our rods and cones are working.
Yeah.
Overdrive, bro. Bro, what are you doing,
If you're not out of control, your rods and cones aren't in control. You've got an astigmatism.
Today we learn.
Oh, we're
Should
doing
we do
it now?
It?
We're
I
doing it now? Yeah, let's do it. Let's
we can
do
talk
it.
About
okay,
more.
No. We wasted enough time. We'll talk about cool stuff in the podcast.
Yeah.
Anyway, guys, thank you so much for listening.
So much.
We'll thank you again at the end. But
Absolutely.
Thank you. 100 episodes. This is insane.
Thank you very much.
We really appreciate it.
Yeah, we really appreciate it.
So, without further ado.
Ado.
Yes.
Today we learned number 100 with Paul Scheer.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds. We'll be right back.
Hello and welcome to Today We Learn. Hope you guys are doing well. Happy Monday or whatever day you're listening to this. I'm Dan Casey.
And as always, my name is Razzle.
And yeah, it's good to be back,
man.
Welcome
back, Dan. I've
been gallivanting, globetrotting.
Yeah.
You've been MIA for a few
weeks. I've been out and about. Yeah, I was an Indonesian-born rapper for a spell. but now I'm back.
Now you're back.
I was in the Middle East.
The Middle East?
In Abu Dhabi.
Yes, you were.
Racing, drifting, all in the name of Furious 7.
Yes. So Paul, our guest, is a huge fan of the Furious movies.
Giant fan of the Fast and Furious. I like the Furious more than the Fast, but I can go either way.
I'm more of an ampersand man myself. But yeah, I was just over there for the home video release. They flew a bunch of entertainment journalists over there to ostensibly interview Tyrese Gibson, but we also got to like learn how to drift and drag race. And
I love that.
Yeah.
So much so, just so you know where I'm at on my Fast and Furious level, I tried to get an invite to the Fast and Furious opening of the new ride at Universal.
Oh, man.
I we're not really even inviting people. It's like a photo op with Tyrese. And I was like, I'll still go.
I'll take that up.
Tyrese seems to be the only one who really gets out in front of them all. Like, I mean, Vin D sometimes. But he's the one, like, whenever he's the one that's always there.
Yeah.
Luda not showing up all the time.
No.
No, Ludacris he's got his, like, restaurants in Atlanta to manage. He has, like, a chain of them down there, I think.
Well, Tyrese is doing something interesting now. Like, he's releasing his own album independently.
Yes.
Okay.
So he, like, has made all these viral videos of him, like, on a bus, like, in a subway station going, "Hey, I'm Tyrese. You got to listen to my album," and he'll start singing. And he'll, like, in the attempt to really go grassroots. I mean, obviously, some people will tape it and then talk about it, but...
Well, he's really trying to reinvent himself, drafting off of the steam and, like, the strength of the Fast and Furious movies. He actually wants to open a studio in Abu Dhabi, because there's huge tax credits over there for films being made over there. Star Wars Episode 7 filmed over there, Fast and Furious 7. Basically, if your film is a number 7, then you're allowed to film there.
I saw Mission Impossible last night, and it was like, it was Paramount, then it was Chinese Movie Company, and then Alibaba. Like, that was the three, like, it was like, whoa, that was the first time it ever hit me. Like, oh, we're not making movies anymore. This is all financed somewhere
else. Exactly. You know, it's all, you got to make it for the international box office nowadays, because movies are a global commodity.
I mean, who would have thought that Fast and Furious is like the thing that we hold on a pedestal for being like, that is the most multicultural film, like successful film, not the Avengers, into the world, I feel like.
The world. And, I mean, Lionsgate, right? Or Universal.
Universal.
It single-handedly saved Universal.
Crazy.
And it's just mind-blowing.
Well, they totally reinvented the franchise, shifted gears with number 5.
Yeah,
and then,
five was good, a little too serious. 6 was great, and then what was the one? Four. Was the 4 where they were running drugs.
That was a serious one,
but that was like they were starting to do it. Yeah, I'd rather see that than the Avengers.
Honestly, they're essentially superheroes at this point.
Oh, 100%.
Jumping across a highway, driving cars out of planes.
Well, and that line, I think it was in 5, it established the world that they're in. Like, The Rock was like, whatever you do, do not let them get in a car.
Yeah.
And from then on, it's like, okay, that's their superpower.
And now it's kind of extended even past that. I mean, The Rock, essentially, in shielding a woman, I forget her name. I want to say Adrian Pilecki. It's not her, but it's somebody who has a name like that. He grabs her. Yep. A building blows up.
Yep.
He flies out of it and lands on the roof of a car and just broke his arm.
Yeah.
Just broke his arm. She's fine because she was cradled by the biggest man of all time. But that's the kind of level that these guys are. And The Rock, you know, when he's really upset, can rip off a cast and then shoot a
he just flexes his broken arm.
Yeah, amazing.
The cast shoots off.
Before we go any further, ladies and gentlemen, obviously you know who he is. You know that voice. You've seen him on. You've seen him in Prana 3D. You've seen him on Clear History. You've seen him on
The League.
And you obviously listened to his very amazing podcast, How Did This Get Made? Please welcome to the show, Paul Scheer.
How are you guys?
Good. How are you today?
Good. Thank you for the very formal introduction.
Yeah.
What if I was just like, please welcome to the podcast, Jason Mantzoukas?
We probably share most of the same credits.
So we usually like to start off the podcast by having our guest either give a fact about themselves that people might not know or something they learned recently. Doesn't have to be anything groundbreaking. Could be just like a random Snapple fact, but...
Okay. Something that I learned recently about myself. All right. Here is something interesting. Not based in science.
Sure.
Or fact.
I love it.
Or provable fact. I believe that I have elements of ADHD. Recently, I was like, I think I may have that. And I'll tell you why. It doesn't manifest the same way as other people. But I was listening to the amazing Channing Tatum on Howard Stern. And he talked about this thing. He's like, yeah, I can't sit still for a long period of time. Like, if I sit still, I'll fall asleep. And I was like, oh, something that happens to me. Like, not at a desk, but I get sleepy if I'm, like, too still. And then I went on this Google wormhole about ADHD, and I was like, well, I kind of have a couple of these things. My issue is I am productive. I don't procrastinate to end, but I will balance multiple things. So it's an undiagnosed case of ADHD, in my opinion, based on what Channing said and a couple of articles. Like, again, I'm learning that this is a great example of it. The internet has no – there's no – like, I read three websites, and each one gave me a very different idea of what it would be. And I'm like, well, according to this one and kind of this one, it is. But this one, it's not. So I don't know. Yeah. We'll see. So, I don't even know how you check for that. Yeah. And what would I even do for it? I'm a functioning person.
Exactly. It seems to be working so far, so I'd say you're probably fine unless you're just having trouble finishing that one thing you need to get done.
Right, yeah, right. No, yeah, so things get done.
It's definitely ADHD is – it's definitely one of those things as an adult that's like, well, I mean, everybody – like if you're – it's like – Jim Gaffigan's got that funny joke where it has to deal with like his phone or whatever, and it's like, my friends are always telling me to put my phone away, and it's always like, well, do you just be more interesting? And it's kind of, to me, it's kind of like that, like with adults with ADD or ADHD, is it's like, I mean, everybody loses their like focus or whatever if something's not as compelling to them as an adult, and especially in the industry that we're in, we get entertained so much or our brains are working and creative
but
so often.
But that's bad though.
Yeah, where you're diluting your attention so many times.
Correct.
That you get push notifications.
To where if you sit still,
look at.
If you sit still and your brain goes down, then you would, in theory.
You have to retrain your brain to focus on a single thing sometimes.
Yeah, I was reading an article about how we don't even read the same way anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's much more of a culture of skimming, which is very interesting.
Yeah.
And this author went back and tried to reread a very big book of literature, you know, a tough book. And she said, I had a very hard time kind of doing it. So I try to read. I always like to read, but it's difficult. Like you get like in these zones where to find time to do a bunch of stuff. Now I'm a dad, so I love being a dad, but it's also like there's so little free time, so little kickback time. I love it, but it's intense.
It's hard. Like the older I get, the harder it is for me to just sit down and read.
Right.
Which is a bummer because I used to really like reading. But I mean,
You got to make that time. You got to find that book.
Like it's easier to do audiobooks or you know podcasts. You know, it's when you're in your car, that's what.
Well,
you know.
But if you do a thing where you get that whisper sync where you can kind of get your book, you're reading it on your Kindle. You get in your car, it continues. You gotta have like a little back and forth.
Future is here.
A little chocolate, a little peanut butter comes together. It's so good. But it is. It's interesting. It's like reading a well-written article. That's the other thing too. We are inundated with poorly written things.
Oh my goodness!
Everyone's a reviewer. Everyone critiques. There's no thought behind it. It's like I'm getting paid to write an article. I have to shit this out. And so a lot of things are going by the wayside. We are getting more information, but is that information quality? I don't know.
Yeah, it's just the volume has increased exponentially. Not every thought deserves a think piece, and I think that is part of the problem is because everyone needs to generate clicks to keep themselves in business.
Well, I remember very clearly, like, the AV Club is one of the only few places that reviews weekly episodes of television.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was doing all my shows, really, every time we get an AV Club reviewer, it's very interesting because You would imagine if you're reviewing every episode of a show, you should be a fan of that show, because it's not like you're not giving a to review every episode. You should just be the fan, because it's not like you're not going to pull somebody in like, well, let me read the review of this week's episode before I decide to watch it. Uh-huh. It's more of a companion piece. And I've had two shows that I've been on where the reviewer seems ultimately nonplussed. Like, I got to do this. And like the last year on The League, or 2 years ago, the woman who was reviewing our show was like, I don't like this show. And so I don't understand fantasy football, and I don't like it. So this episode wasn't good for me. And I was like, yeah, no shit. And it's also, but this idea of like personal opinion like overtaking, like there's another thing. One episode of NTSF that we did dealt with E.T., and I'll always remember this. Read this stupid AV Club review, and the guy was like, I didn't like E.T., so I don't like this. It's like, well, so that just not like, because you didn't like something, that means that this is worth no merit on your scale, because it's a review. Yeah. It's like, how is that a review?
It's definitely we're in the day and age where reviewers, it's more opinion. It's not even reviewers.
It's personality driven, not objectivity driven.
For instance, you know, and I wasn't a huge fan of the movie, but the movie Pixels.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like inherently.
Wait. The way you set that up, I thought you were going to say, like, Inside Out.
Yeah.
Pixels, no one's a huge fan of that movie. No,
correct. You go on inherently. I got to imagine, you know, you read some of the reviews, and they're just lambasting it regardless. And it's because they just want to be on that hating Adam Sandler
train.
Well,
it becomes fun to write a real slammy article.
Absolutely, especially when it's an opinion on, I never liked Pac-Man or whatever. Yeah. So it's like, so
I couldn't relate.
But my issue with Pixels, just to go, I mean, I want to continue your point too, but like, it was like, this is weird. It's a movie about 80s nostalgia geared at children.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
Who have no context for it.
Yeah. Wreck-It Ralph at least bows down to both. Like, Wreck-It Ralph does like their version of what, you know, Donkey Kong is to a certain extent. And then, but also like pays homage to like Halo and everything. Yeah. But continue. I'm sorry.
Well, just that same boat is you. A lot of these, I'll read. One of my favorite reviewers is what's Alan watching? And it's on HitFix. And he's
Alan Sepinwall.
Alan Sepinwall. He's really good. And I used to, I started reading him when Mad Men was first coming out, because he would do those and all that, and they're really good. But lately, I've been reading his for True Detective, and I don't hate the new season of True Detective.
Right.
I enjoy it. It needed to be a 180, but like, you can tell how much he doesn't like the show, so his reviews just all of a sudden become lacking, because it's more an opinion piece.
Well, because that's the interesting thing. Like, recaps, you can review something.
Yeah.
As a piece and say, this is my review. But a recap is built into the idea that, well, you should be a fan. This should be a companion piece.
Like, exactly.
I often would read Mad Men pieces in Slate, and I read some of Alan's pieces. Because it's like, I just enjoyed this. Now let me see what somebody else who probably enjoyed it thought, I didn't think this was as good, but let me see why. Like, it's a companion piece.
Yeah, it's why shows like Talking Dead are so successful, because it's basically supplanting the water cooler conversation, but on a national scale, giving like everyone a chance to join in this conversation.
And
I think it's different when you assign like a letter grade or a numerical score to it, because then it becomes a qualitative measure of how good that episode was, as opposed to a discussion about it with a like-minded fan base.
We definitely, over time, you know, we're losing the Siskel and Ebert and the ratings and the reviews.
What happened?
And it's the internets and the blogs and the, you know, the think pieces. The idea of reviewing has definitely become more
clickbait.
Hey, I'm a clickbait personality. Yeah. I have a Twitter. I have a blog. I'm a writer. I'm going to tell you my opinion on it.
Well, literally,
I'm going to slap a review title on it.
I think that people really attack Sandler relentlessly.
Absolutely.
I don't even think it's totally based in that much reason, but Variety, the day after that movie came out, released top five reasons Adam Sandler shouldn't be a movie star anymore.
I read that.
Oh my
I read
God.
That.
And then conversely, when Mission Impossible, the new one came out, it's like, top five reasons why Tom Cruise is back.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just these, like, it's crazy. But that's what you remember. Look, I remember reading now a review or a thing that says top five reasons Adam Sandler isn't a movie star anymore. I'm like, oh, all right. And then all of a sudden, that's a thought that I'm not maybe having, or I don't know. And now you're a little sullied by it.
And it's like a company like Variety that's mm-hmm. supposed to be like a trade paper mm-hmm. of news, mm-hmm. castings or promotions or whatever. You know, this got bought. And that, now it's articles like that are getting put out on the Variety website. And yeah. it's like, this is kind
and
of
that
like
used to
a,
be like that
like
army,
Gawker.
Yeah, like whatever army. He was like a gossip column, like, you know, like yeah. it would be more that yeah. the shield of those people.
Those
like.
Types of things should, in my opinion, they don't belong on like a Variety, like because
well, yeah,
it's not. It's an opinion from someone
odd.
Who's a writer, not a movie producer.
It's odd because, and by the way, like I've been very lucky with the people yeah. who've been very kind to things that I do and stuff like that. But I also feel like, why do we need so many opinions?
Yeah.
There are so many like we can all see it. It's the yeah. first time that everything's accessible mm-hmm. to us. Like, why do I need you to, you know? It's interesting. It's like it's just clamoring for being
yeah.
heard,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
and it's you know it's an extension of everything you know that is kind of going on. But and I think that glut of information makes it hard to again going back to the ADHD of it all like. To kind of like just be like, no, I'm focusing on one, like just zooming it down and getting yeah. it down to a very small level. You know, so it's interesting.
Yeah. yeah. I think it's like, I think it's because there, as you said, there's so much stuff available now. The sheer like volume of choice is daunting. Like when you go to a restaurant
oh,
and
yeah.
there's a massive menu.
It's like eating at a diner every
yeah,
night.
You're yeah. paralyzed by indecision.
Yeah.
It's the same reason like half the time I find myself, I won't go to a restaurant until I Yelp it first. And
I'm
like,
yeah.
what am I doing? Why don't I just try it? What if it's really good?
I mean,
what
yeah.
if like, Janine's complaint about the Cobb salad is totally off base?
But this is like the weird thing that happens. It's like, if you and I are at a table, and you're like, yeah, I had the cheddar melt. I don't even know what cheddar melt is, but like, cheddar melt, it was good.
Cheese.
Yeah, yeah, I guess, yeah. yeah. Call it, made it sound really more.
No bread.
Yeah.
Just melted cheese on a plate.
And I'd be like, oh, okay, cool. But if I'm looking at an Amazon review, I'm like all of a sudden, oh, this guy knows what he's talking
yeah.
about. No, you don't.
he
like,
had this melt yeah. shipped to him. He went through steps.
And it's so crazy because it's also like that same dumb thing where you say to like the waiter or waitress, oh, what's good here? In your opinion.
Yeah.
Like, you could be talking to someone who has never, like, I hate salad. I love yeah. salads. Like, so this guy's like, I hate salads. He's never going to recommend the salad.
Yeah.
That may be my favorite thing. But I'm like, all of a sudden, putting it in you, like, I would prefer someone to say, hey, just so you know, the cheddar melts here are awful. Like, don't,
yeah.
like heads up. People have told me it's bad. Like, but to go, like, what do you recommend? That's a lot of faith in someone else's taste buds. That why like
yeah.
what we have no basis, we have no line
yeah.
to connect us to this person. We don't know anything about them.
So
they could be drug addict, like, you know, eating like cat food every day and like, what's good here? And they'll tell you something that you're not gonna
you gotta try the cat food
yeah.
and the heroin.
Yeah.
And that kind of even like it even kind of goes like hand in hand with like award shows, because
mm-hmm.
it's like you could have, you know, the best actor or best movie that wins the Oscar is 10 years from now. Like, you look at movies that we love now or mass populace
yeah.
loves now as a society. Oh, this is on, like, then you look at that was nominated for a best Oscar, but you look at what won, and it's
the second place won. It's like, oh, it was between, you know, I'm messing up my years,
yeah.
but like Avatar and The Departed, you know.
Avatar and Hurt Locker.
Oh, Hurt Locker,
yeah.
right, yeah. So it's like that, those kind of debates. It's like, well, what, you know, what now, this many years
yeah.
later,
mm-hmm.
is the best picture?
Yeah.
You know, what's one
yeah, it's interesting what holds up. Speaking of Avatar, I know they're coming out with obviously there's two sequels on the way, one
yeah.
of which James Cameron said will, quote, make you shit yourself.
Yeah.
Right. I hope it doesn't.
Sure.
That's not how I want to see a movie. They're making a theme park with like bioluminescent plants that you touch and they react to your touch. But 5 years, well, not 5 years out, like what now, 6 years out, seven
sure.
years out?
Long time.
I have not thought about Avatar. It's
no.
not, it's been like, if it's on TV, sure, I might tune in.
I wouldn't even tune in. I feel like Avatar, I'd only want to see it in the 3D perfect
yeah.
way
yeah.
that it was presented. Like, that was a movie that is, like the improv show equivalent of a movie, in the sense that when I was there, it was a magical experience. Yes. That mm-hmm. was awesome. That then never really give any more thought
yeah.
to.
Yeah.
Like, I think, yeah, that was good. It was good.
Yeah.
But I can't tell you the plot of it.
You're not quoting it. You're not referencing it.
It's not like Aliens. No. It's not like it just it. It was, I think,
it's
that
not like
movie.
Mad Max.
No, Mad Max, amazing.
Oh, man.
It was. It's more of. It's more of an exercise in technology.
Yeah.
It's like when you see, like, I just saw a Mission Impossible in 4DX.
Oh,
so, how was that?
Did the seat move?
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. So basically, like, the idea, like, the 4DX experience is pretty amazing. It's so think of a regular movie theater, about maybe 60 to 80 seats. It's small. Yeah. You know, it's not giant. And every, like, every four seats are connected as one. So you have your own, you know, holder and everything like that. And the seats move like a ride. So you go up and down and left and right. But you're not independently moving. You're moving in this, like, kind of chair grouping. It rains on you. They pump
God.
In smells. They do strobe effects. They have smoke. They, oh, my gosh, what else? Yeah, they do a lot of, you know, it's a wind. It's and then when the bullets fly, they shoot right by your ears.
Oh, wow.
It's great. And I think it makes a good movie better. And I think it makes a bad movie okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I did not like Jurassic World at all. I did like it. I didn't think it's a good movie.
Yeah.
Like, that misses the fun for me of what Jurassic Park was. But I saw it in 4DX, and I was like, I liked it. It was fine.
So did the 4DX make...
make the heels
Rogue
running.
Nation did it make it was so Rogue Nation was awesome as it was right?
Yeah
I believe it was
I
and
saw
it was
normally
in yes England. Yeah and it was great like there's a really fun thing like in there's a scene in the film and you don't need to know much context for it where Tom Cruise is getting beaten
of course
and the guy is kind of like punching him like hooking him in the ribs or the sides. And it's great because you're in your chair. It's like your left side gets hit and your right side gets hit. So it's very articulate to even where the characters are getting
wow.
hit. And
that's
when
amazing.
He's taking off in the famous plane stunt in the beginning, you're feeling all that wind just like yeah. hitting your face. It's fun. It's really
fun. I got to see it. I'm going to see it this weekend. I'm a huge Tom Cruise fan.
Yeah. Oh, I love Tom Cruise.
I got to see it. Maybe I'll see it in 4DX. Where did you see that?
There's only one theater in Los Angeles. It's at the Regal downtown.
Okay.
I mean, it's a very specific add to this. Your podcast audience,
yeah.
but if you're in LA, I think there's only a handful of 4DXs.
There's only a handful of 4DX theaters in the country right now. I know that they're getting bigger and bigger as it gains more
it's
success.
A great way to, I don't know, like for that type of movie, I'm in. Like, you know, I want to see a big blockbuster like that. I would love to see Mad Max like that. Like, you know, it's like, it's relentless. It's
but
fun.
you don't see like 12 Years a Slave like that.
Exactly. yeah. So it's like, but the way that movies are now coming out, it feels like there are more opportunities for those. Yeah.
Oh, totally.
So you're on the league.
Yes.
Which is about fantasy football.
Indeed.
Here's a fun fact about fantasy football.
Mm-hmm.
Modern fantasy football can be traced back to the late Wilford Wickenbach.
Classic Wickenbach.
Classic
Bill the Gill, they say. An Oakland area businessman and a limited partner in the Oakland Raiders. In a New York hotel room during the 1962 Raiders cross-country trip, Wickenbach, along with a PR dude from the Raiders, by the name of Bill Tunnell, and Tribune reporter Scotty Sterling, they developed the system of organization and rule book, which eventually became the modern basis for fantasy football.
Wow. Now, I had always heard that it was started by a group of friends who were very much into football, and it was called Rotisserie League because it started in a rotisserie chicken place.
Really?
Okay. So so fantasy football is a term that was deemed later, but it was always called a rotisserie league. And it may have been, they may have started off as baseball and then got into football, but I think it was football. And so they met at a chicken place, and this guy would sit down with the stats and like kind of come up with this fantasy football idea.
Yeah, I think you're correct. It actually, the rotisserie league baseball, it's a specific scoring system
yes.
that started... It was established by the Chicago Baseball League in 1978 by Ivan R.D. and a bunch of others who, they would meet in a rotisserie française. It was named after a restaurant in New York City where they used to go. And
oh, wow.
They'd meet for lunch.
And then that, I think, then bred into all the other things.
And it's been nicknamed, it's a popular scoring system still nicknamed Roto, R-O-T-O.
Yes, Mr. Roto, which is Matthew Berry, a very famous NFL fantasy guy.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Roto.
So I have a couple other fantasy facts here. What do you guys think the average age of fantasy football players is nationwide?
I'm going to say like the range?
What, just it's very. It's a one age. What the average nationwide? The average age of a fantasy football player.
All right, that's a good question. I am going to say it is somewhere within 28 to 33. Like that. That's my range that I'm feeling.
Okay.
And I will say 31, 32. 32.
32?
I'm going to go with $1.
Age one. You start playing from birth. You're very close. It's 34.
Okay. You know, that was my – it's so funny. I never trust my first instinct. I was going to say 30. That 34 was literally the first thing that popped into my head.
Yeah, it's a you know, it definitely has a younger demographic, so it's got spans the gamut. What percentage do you guys think of fantasy players are women?
Oh, that's interesting. I'm going to say maybe about 12%.
12%?
4%.
4%? It's actually 20%.
Not bad. All right, not bad. And yeah, it's definitely growing. One of the things that's been interesting with our show is we've been doing it for 7 years. It's our last season coming up now. And I think people were turned off to our show in the first season because it was billed as a fantasy football show. And if I heard that, I didn't even audition for the show because I was not a fantasy football player. And I was like, I don't want to audition for the show. Like, what is fantasy football? I don't do that. Like, I can't improvise within that realm. Mm-hmm. And so I turned it down, and then they wound up coming back around. But I feel like people were turned off by the idea. But then a lot of women really love our show because even if they don't play fantasy football, and our show is so loosely based in fantasy football. It's like the overriding thing, but the underlying things are much different. Are all these women saying, like, that's my husband, that's my boyfriend. Oh, you got me into fantasy football because it starts to become more gettable. I mean, fantasy football now is so easy.
Yeah.
You pick a couple things. You don't have to do anything. It's all done for you. It makes watching football way more interesting.
Oh, totally.
I feel like there has been this breakthrough in the last, I think, like 5 or 6 years where it's like, oh, this is an accessible, easy thing. And it's and websites are set up so quickly and easily. It's great.
Exactly. And I to your point, the league is part of the reason why I started playing because I started to get it a little bit.
Yeah.
It was previously seemed like this dense thing. I was like, I don't know that much about sports. Like,
right.
Who knows? But then I started playing and it's a blast because it's just you and your friends. It's basically you're playing like a role-playing game with your friends.
It's D&D with real people,
with like
yeah.
meaty paladins instead of
yeah. So, and I love football too because it is a much more manageable schedule. I know there's fantasy baseball and fantasy basketball. That's a
nightmare.
Lot
too
to
many
keep
games.
Up. Yeah, too many
Shut
games. You gotta like you have to really be working a solid desk job to be able to be like I'm going to keep track of this all the time.
Even then, even with fantasy football, it's already like. Plenty of I already spend enough time like frantically checking my phone.
Oh god, it's the worst. I know. It's like I had to pull down my leagues. Like last year I was in 3 leagues and I was like I
Holy
can't do
shit.
It.
Yeah.
Although
I did
right
three
now
as well.
Really it's so like I'm in a fantasy movie league right now, which is really fun.
Okay.
It's really cool, actually set up by a fantasy football guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the idea, and it definitely it goes on throughout the summer.
For like summer box office.
Yes. And so you have a $1,000 a movie buck to spend every week, and you have 8 theaters to fill. So this week it would be like, all right, Mission Impossible to fill one theater is $415.
Yeah.
So you may want to take that, but then you got to figure out, well, what's going to fill my other 8 theaters? Because you want to get a high gross. So you start to play this law of averages. Like for me, I doubled down really hard this week on Trainwreck and Paper Towns.
Oh,
I was like, all right, they're
smart.
Cheaper buys for me to get in because I only have $1,000. I'm only going to have $1,000. And they're going to have a high return on their investment and they're going to come in stronger.
Yeah.
So instead of just buying 2 Mission Impossibles, I've filled like my whole theater and just like doubled down.
Sorry, Vacation.
Yeah. Vacation was a little expensive too. So you have to like kind of play it out. And so it's really interesting. It's really interesting to watch. I am about a 50. I'm like a middle of the pack player.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And when I see the other winners of it, I'm like, oh, that's what you did. That was super smart. But there's been a couple of weeks where I've also, sounds so nerdy, I've picked the Avengers in 3 theaters and I do really well because it's the highest per screen average.
Oh, okay.
So it's not necessarily how much they're making as much as how much they're bringing people in.
Smart
so, so it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, see, that's fun.
Yeah, that's a nice, that's some nice inside baseball that makes it. You apply the fantasy mentality to that. Yeah.
And
see.
And you're also, you've
and
also.
And it's called Fantasy Movie League. I'm not involved
fantasy
with it in any way, but if you were listening to this
cool.
and you feel compelled
fantasy
to look
League.
At it, and you can join it at any point.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Awesome.
Yeah. I may look into that because that sounds fun.
Yeah.
You're also, we've discussed prior,
yeah.
You're in a fantasy. You do a fantasy bachelor.
I do a fantasy bachelor league. I am in it. I guess it's now the totals have been calculated because the finale just happened. And I was doing pretty good in that. Yes, that was actually something that my wife started.
Okay.
And then couldn't keep track of anymore. And then now someone else, I'm in someone else's
league.
But that's a hard one because you're basing it really on first impressions and how the producers are laying these people out. The way that we do it is the first you get to watch the first episode with the rose ceremony, and then you have to pick people. So you go, I'm picking three people, and those three people often are the people that there's multiple things in the whole thing. You're not just picking a winner. You're going to try to be getting the person who's going to get the first kiss, the person who's going to get the first time to be in an airplane, you know,
the first hot tub date.
Exactly. Yeah. So all those are different point systems.
Yeah.
So we, even for our Men Tell All special, we added special points in if that came about, and that definitely was a game changer, our Men Tell All special.
We did something similar at my office with Game of Thrones.
Oh, wow. Now I'm behind, so no spoilers for me right now.
So here's what happens.
Oh, no. I'm so nervous that someone's going to spoil
you get points if someone died, or you'd lose points if someone died. You get points if someone killed someone. You get points if someone engineered someone's death. Stuff
that's
like
great.
That.
That's really fun.
Yeah, but there was a definite, like, nerve-wracking part because some of the people in the office had read the books, other people had not,
okay.
So certain people just, like...
But that's kind of out the window now.
Yeah, now it's totally totally fair playing
totally
field.
Well, we were talking about movies. Here's a little fun fact about Star Wars.
Okay.
During the... for the Star... I believe from what I got here... The first Star Wars, the ending was kind of a little lackluster in all the test screenings and all of the battles. So what George Lucas did is he spliced together and cut a with the footage with cuts from World War II dogfights.
Oh, wow.
And the space battle in the end is they pretty much used those for like shot lists.
Oh, wow.
And they actually did frame by frame with these actual dogfight footages of just inside TIE Fighters and Millennium Falcons to give the same suspense of
That's
action.
Really interesting.
And to get a lot of the engine sounds and like sounds for the ships, sound designer Ben Burtt would go and record a lot of these old warplanes and then like put them through a bunch of filters and combine them with other things.
Oh, wow. Now, I just recently played the Star Wars game Battle Pod.
How is that?
It's really fun. It's over at the Dave & Buster's here in Hollywood. Again, if you
so
want to know where I hang out, it's at 4DX and Dave & Buster's.
Hey, Wednesday.
Without my child.
If there's skee ball, I'm there.
Yeah,
Wednesday nights have half game night.
Oh, really?
It's half off game night.
Ooh, that's pretty great. I like that. So the Battle Pod is kind of fun. It's you sit in a pod, a circular pod, and it doesn't move, but you are surrounded, I would say, like a giant IMAX screen. It's big. It's like out to your arms.
It's like immersive.
It's immersive. And it's really, really fun. And they, rightfully so, make the first level super easy. And it's fun. And it's like you can feel very successful and proud of yourself.
You just feel like you're a hero.
It's great. It's really,
really
fun.
And they sandbag you on level two?
Yeah. Level two is a little harder. But all the ones that you want to play. There was a... my parents vacationed in Walt Disney World a lot.
Okay.
And so much so, 18 years that I can, or not 18, well, probably 15 years in a row.
MGM Studios.
MGM
Studios. That giant AT-AT.
Oh, that was amazing. That was awesome. But they had this one thing that I loved as a kid on Pleasure Island. It was a video game arcade, and you paid $20 and you could play anything as much as you wanted.
Oh, man.
No fee. And that was the way I want to run a video game place. Like, let me just play it. I can suck at it, and I can keep on playing it until I'm bored with playing it. And that changed everything for me.
It's almost like even Dave & Buster's. I was just there on Wednesday night, and it's fun. It was the first time I've been there in ages, and I went in there with like a pocket full of quarters, thinking it's a thing. Then all of a sudden, they got these cards.
You need Dave bucks.
And
the cards.
It's almost – I probably – would have stayed there. Like, I don't drink, so the bar there is kind of useless to me. But I have a lot of friends that do in that regard. And I feel like if more places like that would instigate that, you could almost make more money having adults go. Or, like, there's a cool barcade downtown called 82 that I'll go to on occasion. And it's everything's a quarter, so it's, like, straight-up arcade. But if you almost charged a cover – Unlimited.
I spent like $45 there without even blinking an eye, and I was psyched because I was like, first time I've been to an arcade where I'm like, I have money, I don't care. Like I was like, I'm an adult. Like $40 is not a big deal. I wasn't like there to drink. I was like, I want to play more Battle Pod. Like, let's do it. Like, you know,
just go in and just unlimited. Yeah. Like that way you can.
Yeah, but you gotta think they're gonna make from a business perspective. Yeah. It'd be great if they did that, but they're gonna make so much more money if they charge per play.
But think about it like this: if you walk in, and on a Wednesday night or whatever, and they go $40 and you get unlimited gameplay, would you spend $40 every time you go? I don't think you would. I think you would. I think that you like. I don't think most people would spend $40. I think they would make their money back. I think they would. I think there would be one person who would definitely, you know, work the house. But I feel like, but for the most part, you would be like, of course I want unlimited. And then you wouldn't really keep track of it. And then all of a sudden you're like, I don't know. It was worth it, you know?
Because it's what, like $1, $2 to play the Star Wars game?
Yeah.
In theory, are you going to play that 20 times?
And they really mess you up there, too, because it's like 100 points.
Yeah, like
it's,
100 point system.
Yeah, and it's really confusing because it doesn't really equal. It's not $100.
How many bitcoins?
Yeah, like, it's a lot. Like, they go like, do you want to supersize your card? Like, if you hit a button and it's like you get extra 25. Yeah. It's like it's they're getting you every which way.
And like, it's not even like they're not even flat. Like two points to play.
No,
some of them are like 1.3 credits.
Yeah, it's really
where do these
confusing.
Percentage credits come from?
Yeah,
We consulted with leading economists. Find the opportunity cost. Going back to the subject of movie stars for a second, I was curious. You know, you mentioned those two articles in Variety, Five Reasons Why Tom Cruise Is Back, Five Reasons Why Adam Sandler Is Not a Movie Star. So I went to boxofficemojo.com, compared their lifetime grosses.
Yeah.
So,
ooh, can we guess?
Yes, yes. All Adam right. Sandler, over the course of 31 movies, what do you think his lifetime gross is?
All right. Here's my opinion of how I'm going to think about it, because I'm not going to be super competitive to be like, let's who wins.
Yeah.
It's going to be definitely lower than Tom Cruise. And I'm going to say the biggest reason why, he's not an international movie star. I don't think that his movies play as well overseas. Like if you had a Mission Impossible and Adam Sandler at his best, it's not going to translate to Germany as much as Mission Impossible.
And Tom's been around for a whole decade longer.
Interestingly enough, Tom Cruise, only 35 films. On his lifetime gross.
Okay.
So very close.
Very close. I was surprised to see that.
I'm very surprised to see that. Okay. So it's got to be in the billions, right? I mean,
correct.
Yeah. So, man.
We could also do average per film if that's.
Okay. Yeah. I would say that Sandler was averaging in the low 100s per film. Like, that's my point. Like, if you go, like, take the highest and the lowest. You know, maybe anywhere between 75.
Because you take the two grown-ups.
Yeah.
And that's those are like 400.
Yeah, and that I think those are the biggest movies he's ever done.
Correct. So that's 800,000 or 800 million right there.
And but then you look at Tom Cruise, who is probably doing like 100 easily in the United States consistently, but around the world, probably knocking that up a lot. Like I feel like it's – I mean, oh, man, I'm bad with math here too. So is it like the difference of like – like 100 billion and I don't know. What is it? What to see?
So for
Tom Cruise, let's say I'm going to guess Tom Cruise is as maybe 5.2
billion. 5.2
billion? And Adam Sandler's is maybe 2 billion?
Let's do Tom Cruise first. You said 5.2. Sure.
All right. I will say, I'm going to say 8 billion.
8? 7.9.
Wow, there you go.
That's close.
Yeah.
But you went over.
7.9 yes, billion. Over. Yeah. Adam Sandler, what do you guys think?
2.5.
I'm going to say 2 billion maybe.
3.9 worldwide. Okay. 3.9 billion.
Wow, pretty close.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, their domestic averages, Adam Sandler's 78.9 million, Tom Cruise 96. Point nine million.
For average, I guess.
Which is pretty, it's pretty close. Yeah. Much closer than I was expecting.
Yeah, well, I wonder if you put Will Ferrell in to see where his, where he falls.
Oh, yeah.
Because Will, I think, makes movies that are less across the board. Like, I feel like he has a lot of smaller movies not making a lot. But I'm just curious.
But
now
his big ones make
a lot.
A lot.
But I don't know if they do anything overseas.
Yeah, see that, yes.
You know?
His international box office $2.7 billion.
All right, so lower than Sandler.
And his across 29 movies, so he's right up there too.
Yeah.
His average opening for domestic is $68.5 million.
See, he's a little bit like a little bit lower because he makes better choices.
Exactly. Yeah. He's got he's got like a lot of cult stuff that.
Like Anchorman, the first Anchorman is not a blockbuster, and the second one just it's like it's interesting to see how that works.
Yeah. You've also got stuff like Casa de Mi Padre in there. Yeah. Which is like he just made that because he wanted to make it.
Yeah. Stranger Than Fiction. A lot of cool stuff in there.
Yeah.
Movies. Speaking of movies, a lot of when you go to movies, you eat snacks.
Yeah.
One of my favorite snacks to eat at a movies is Twizzlers. I'm a huge fan of Twizzlers.
That is very rare. Are you an East Coast guy?
Yep. East Coast, Michigan.
See, yeah, I am an East Coast guy. Twizzlers is my snack of choice. Yeah. But out here in Los Angeles,
suck at Red Vines.
Oh, I hate those. They're the worst. Red Vines.
Garbage.
People love Red Vines so much, but they're like it's almost like if you got a loose tooth. Goodbye. Like,
well, I mean,
it's chewing raw. Like,
well, you know what?
I
was the guy going to Universal City Walk out here again. A very specific LA episode we're giving you guys because they have Twizzlers.
Yeah,
and very few places have Twizzlers.
Very few.
I'm a big Twizzler guy, and I tell you what I got when I went to go see Terminator Genesis at the ArcLight, another LA movie theater, edamame.
Really?
They have a new thing I guess they're testing
out.
That
is an LA thing.
It was. But it was so great because it gives you the satisfaction of popcorn without feeling disgusting.
Yeah, you get it's kind of salty. Nice and salty, but...
They give you... Basically, what they do is they steam a bag. It's sealed in a bag.
Do they de-husk it?
You gotta get them out. And you put it, and they put it in a popcorn box or a circular tin. I don't know, whatever. And so then you open it up, the steam kind of comes out, and then you just kind of throw your husks in there. It was great. I felt good after leaving that movie. I didn't feel like I ate disgusting like popcorn.
Yeah, you didn't feel that like buttery glaze of shame on yourself leaving.
Yeah.
Here's something. I didn't know this about edamame. It's edamame, or the edamame bean, is a preparation of immature soybeans in a pod found in the cuisine. And it's generally found in China, Japan, Korea, or Hawaii. Mm. And the pods are boiled or steamed and served with salt. And it's immature soybeans.
Interesting.
So that's what edamame is.
Babies. We're eating aborted soybeans.
Yeah. Teen beans.
Yeah.
They're delicious. They're a very popular like pub snack in Japan.
I don't get the hot dog at a movie. I don't like a hot dog. I don't like the smell of a hot dog
in
a theater. Yeah.
If you're doing that, get out.
I want to have more snack options. We have come so far, and we have so few snack options.
Why are we beholden to the crushing weight of concession history?
I also hate going to see movies, though.
Okay.
And they say, turn off your phones, which I'm on board with.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you hear... You hear bags opening. Like I went to see Birdman, and people were in there eating it, treating it like it was an action movie, and had bags and like it was just loud, loud treats. I'm all for treats for like action movies.
You almost couldn't hear the jazz
but,
drumming.
But when it's like a drama or whatever, I don't eat treats.
Well, let me talk to you about two things that I love about movie theaters. First, the thing that I think we need to spend a few moments on.
Yes.
The ultimate soda machine. I think people out there who've seen it know what I'm talking about.
With the billion buttons and somehow it knows what soda you want.
Yeah. Yes. This thing is the best thing I've ever experienced.
Blows
like if you hit Mellow Yellow, they have like 12 flavors
that
of Mellow Yellow.
You've never heard of.
It's amazing. They have different flavors of seltzer. And what I like to do is I'm not a soda drinker by trade. I don't do it. I don't do it often. But I like to kind of mix in. Like I'll maybe mix a Mellow Yellow with a little like a club soda or soda seltzer water, because it gives me like because again I don't want to be encumbered by disgustingness of drinking like 120 ounces of like sugar, but keeps it fun.
It's the future. Like that's the type of machine where if like I was Tom Cruise rich, I would have it. Even though I don't drink a ton of soda, I would just have it because I want the variety.
If I had an office, that's going in my office, 100%. And I actually went to an office in New York that had one. I was this is genius.
That's the only time I will have soda is at the movie theater.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
It's like a little reward for myself for sitting down.
But you feel like I'm here. I'm enjoying this. Like, it's like I said the other day, I was like, why is it that when I'm at home – and I eat a bag of Twizzlers, I feel like a disgusting pig. But at the movies, it's like, yeah, I'm a fucking hero.
It's the social contract.
Yeah, it's like, no, I'm supposed to eat an entire bag of this in an hour?
Yeah, they're selling it there, so it seems okay.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah, it's like, why are there smaller things? That's why, to me, hands down, there is no better movie-going experience than the Alamo Drafthouse.
Yes, you the ones coming there, to L.A.
Oh, I cannot wait. I've been talking to those guys. It's the best. It's so fun to have a beer. I got like a Jurassic World souvenir cup when I was there, and they have popcorn, freshly made popcorn in a like a real thing. It's
and you can order food, like actual food. You can order a sandwich, a burger, like salad if you want.
Now
they'll give it to you during the movie, and it's not intrusive.
No, they're great. Here is, again, to drop another LA specific, a place that I love out here called iPick.
iPick, yes.
Oh, it's so good. iPick essentially is a 40-person theater, so very tiny. You go downstairs, and maybe not everywhere you go downstairs, but you go into this place. It's a full bar, like a nice – like a
classy
like
bar. You could take like a business meeting there.
Exactly. Then you go into the theater, and it's all Lazy Boys. All Lazy Boys, and each Lazy Boy has like a compartment in it that you can open and put all your shit in there.
Yeah.
Like a backpack, you can put anything at all in that thing. They also have blankets. You can pull that blanket up if you want. They have pillows. You can shoot back your chair and then order food and liquor, and the food is really good.
Yeah.
It's really, really good.
It's a little more – it's actually not that much more expensive than a typical theater, as I've discovered. Maybe like – $2 to $5 more per ticket.
It's awesome.
But it's the experience is worth it. And again, you know, competing with watching things at home, like my wife and I are in this quandary because if we go to see a movie, it's that or dinner. Like you can't go, like, because the way it is, like our baby goes down and then the sitter comes and then we go out. But then it's like, well, what do? We wait till the 10 o'clock movie. Then we're going to be home too late. So it becomes all these like these levels of So this allows us to kind of do both.
Yeah.
You can go there. You can have a drink. You can relax. Then you can have a nice dinner and watch a good movie. And you go home. And you're like, we did something.
And that's classier than splitting a hot dog at the Arclight.
Yeah. And the Arclight should steal that from,
totally. At least offer like a theater with that, because they already have like a bar downstairs.
They have that 21 and over. Yeah.
Yeah. They do 21 and over screenings, which I think is a cool idea.
Yeah.
Even just if you don't drink, it's nice to be able just to see something with adults and not have like a roving pack of coyote children just running around.
I totally agree.
Twizzlers.
Oh, yes.
No worries.
On this podcast.
Previously. Twizzlers, we were talking about Twizzlers.
Yeah.
They were developed by the National Licorice Company in Brooklyn in 1845.
Wow.
Also in 1845, rubber bands were invented.
Okay.
And Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven.
What a great year.
For the first time.
Do you think Edgar Allan Poe snacked on a Twizzler when he finished completing The Raven?
Yeah.
Quote, Raven nevermore.
Once he turned in his manuscript, he rewarded himself by going to buy a bag. He's like, I'm going to be naughty today. Then he got tuberculosis.
Twizzlers also, you can...
What year did you say was that was?
1845.
Fucking Red Vines. Not until 1952.
Fuck,
get out of here.
Get out of here.
Now, get out.
I wonder.
Red Vines tastes like wax. It's like that shitty fucking. Remember from the East Coast? Did you ever have those like it was like a wax bottle?
Yeah.
Every general store.
Every general store.
Sucking out that juice.
Yeah, and a honey straw.
Yeah. Ugh. Here's my opinion, or not my opinion, my thought.
My review.
My review.
Think piece.
I bet you the first Twizzlers were black licorice Twizzlers. Yes. They were not the strawberry, the classics that we are used to. I don't like the cherries. I like strawberry. And I'm a fan of black licorice. So I actually have I actually have black licorice Twizzlers at my house right now.
Okay. Wow. One of the few.
Not a fan of the black licorice, but the original, it was licorice flavor. It was that anise flavored black.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, to tie it back into movies, in the Netherlands, one of the most popular movie snacks is salty licorice.
I would love to try that.
Salty licorice that is, it's more of like a palate cleanser.
I like that.
The average, I think they eat about 4 pounds per Dutchman.
Wow.
Yeah.
We were talking about the Alamo Drafthouse, which is a movie theater that'll serve you beer and you can buy beer. Beer is the world's most widely consumed alcoholic beverage. And it's the third most popular drink overall after water, then tea.
Wow.
So it goes, as far as drinkable beverages go, it goes water, tea, then beer.
Purple stuff.
Worldwide.
Sunny D.
I love a good beer, but it's also like, I mean, I'll be like totally whatever, but I get nervous about the weight issue. It's like, yeah. you can really pack on pounds for no reason. Yeah. And again, with having a child and not getting to the gym that much, I can't afford to have those beers, even though I want that flavor of a beer.
You got to fatten up the baby, then just like lift it like a kettlebell.
Totally. That's what I got to do. I read a thing about a dad who picked up his baby over his head every day, and then by the time the kid was 18 years old, he was still able to pick him up over his head.
Oh, my God.
And yeah, because it's basically weight training, and I'm trying to do that right now.
Yeah, to get a baby, Bjorn, it's just resistance.
Yeah,
it's,
it's like one of those BuzzFeed videos, dad picks up the child every day, and it's like
you'll never believe what happens next.
It's just a sped up video of lifting your kid up every day. We were talking about the fantasy baseball was
Roto
with chicken and all that, rotisserie chicken, all that. Are you a fan of KFC?
I am a fan of KFC. I have not had KFC in quite some time. I feel like I've had better fried chicken. It's like, you know, it's like when you're a kid, it's like, this is the best. So if I'm going to partake in a fried chicken, I'm pretty much like 95% pescatarian, but when I hear about good stuff, I will eat it. Like there's a guy down in, again, it's all dropping all these LA references. There's a bar downtown in Silver Lake called 4100, and on Friday and Saturday nights, this guy comes out from Compton and makes barbecue, and it's amazing. And so, like when I heard about that, I went there and I had some of his barbecue. It was great. Dinah Shore's fried chicken place, again, another place out here, really good fried chicken. So I don't know if I would splurge on KFC.
KFC.
Yeah, well, especially in a major metropolitan area like Los Angeles, there's a
plethora.
Wealth of delicious fried chicken options.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like if you're traveling abroad or somewhere else, then I understand.
But, yeah. But I do like a fried chicken. I mean, who can't? It's downright un-American not to like fried chicken.
Get out.
Yeah.
Everybody's all like, KFC's got a secret recipe, but you can actually buy their recipe.
Where?
It's so the company
from
it's
kernelrecipe.com/secret.
The company that makes it is Marion K Seasoning, and it's sold under the name 99X.
Oh,
and here's a bit of history about that. It is well attested that Harlan Sanders, according to the Wikipedia page here, asked Bill Summers of Marion K. Spices in Brownstone, Indiana, to recreate their secret blend of 11 herbs and spices.
Uh-huh.
While alive, Sanders, because the company ended up growing so largely and becoming franchised out, Sanders recommended the Marion K. seasoning to the franchisees over the actual corporate version that they were making because he thought that the corporate version was getting not getting the quality it deserved.
So we could go to a store right now, or we could order online.
Marion K 99X, and it's in 1982. After Sanders' death, KFC brought a lawsuit against Marion K, and they were prevented. They can no longer sell the KFC franchisees. The KFC people need to actually buy the corporate.
Got it. So their recipe has changed.
So you can
Can go have the original.
You can buy
recipe.
The original KFC seasoning
as Harland intended.
Yeah.
Wow, I want to do that
for 99X. Yeah. It's called 99X, and it's by Marion K Seasoning.
Now, have you guys ever heard of the Curse of the Kernel?
No.
No, what is this?
So the Curse of the Kernel is an urban legend in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
In Japan, every KFC location, and there's a lot of them, they have little statues of Colonel Sanders out front.
Okay.
And each one's a little bit different. Sometimes they decorate them around
Christmas.
I've
seen pictures, yeah.
Around Christmas time, they're usually like looking like Santa. It's right. cool. Like, it's a fun thing to do when you're traveling around, like snap a picture of them.
Right.
Because they love mascots over there. But the Curse of the Kernel is a name attributed to what happened in the wake of the Hanshin Tigers, baseball team in Osaka, in Osaka, Japan. After they won their World Series, the Japan Championship Series in 1985, fans were so overjoyed that they threw the statue from the Dotonbori KFC into the Dotonbori River, which Dotonbori is like this giant outdoor shopping arcade food center. They threw the statue into the river. And it was never recovered.
Ooh.
Wow.
And for the next 18 years, the team was on a losing streak.
Wow.
And that extended across multiple sports until finally they appeared in the Japan series three more times, 2003, 2005, 2014, lost every time.
Wow.
And it was never recovered until 2009 when they finally found it was missing a hand. The glasses were still on, but they finally found it. And I don't know if they've won since, but definitely one of the crazier stories out there, because they've been searching for years, from 1985 to 2009. Yeah.
I would be more impressed if that fact was, and then the year they found it, they won the World Series again.
Yeah, you would hope. You would hope. I wonder. I'm gonna have to look this up real quick.
Was that Gung Ho or what? Mr. Baseball? Tom Selleck going to Japan to play baseball.
Yeah.
And add that into the story. Have that be the sequel or something like that.
No, the only series they've won was 1985.
Ooh, interesting. So that was it.
Yep. Yeah, they angered the chicken gods.
There you go. Oh my God. On the talk of curses.
What do you know about gypsies?
We're approaching the end of the show here, Paul.
Okay.
It becomes your show now.
Okay.
Anything you want to plug or talk about or discuss or any, you know.
Well, yeah, here's anything. Something. Maybe what you guys can find some facts about this. Rob Hubel and I, we were in the show Human Giant together.
Yes.
We do a show every week at UCB Theater called Crash Test.
Yes.
Very great show.
Oh, thanks. And we said to ourselves one time, like, wouldn't this be fun if we took our entire audience, put them on a bus, and drove around L.A. And did a show, a full-on comedy show on a moving bus. So we got this bus from New York that instead of like all the seats facing the driver, they face the side of the bus. And the side of the bus is completely glass.
Mm-hmm.
And Los Angeles becomes our stage. So we made this comedy special, which is available for pre-order now and comes out officially on August 18th for $3.99 on Vimeo. But we've been billing it as the first comedy special, on a moving bus. And I want to know, is that true? Is that a true thing? Because we feel like there's been no other comedy special, stand-up comedy special there. And we have, in ours, we have Aubrey Plaza and Rob Corddry and Aziz Ansari and Seth Morris and music by Earl Sweatshirt and Tom Lennon and Ben Garant. All these amazing people, Natasha Leggero, Ian Carmel. But I want to know if that is, if we're being honest in our billing of it being the first ever comedy special, on a moving bus.
There's...
I'm looking this up right now. I think this might just be a name.
Yeah, okay. there's one called the Comedy Bus.
Yes.
Which it's...
What the heck was on there?
It's a... it was like a bunch of Christian comedians around the country, but okay. I from what I'm reading, I don't think it was like
they did not perform on the bus.
No, I think this is
the first one that was a live special taped on a bus. I know Andy Kaufman took his audience from Radio City Music Hall, put them on buses to go get milk and cookies, but he did not perform on those buses. This is the first ever recorded on a bus, not in a theater. We don't even start in a theater; we start on a bus. Guinness?
Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah.
Okay. This.
All right. What do we got?
The Redneck Comedy Bus Tour.
Okay.
In Nashville, Tennessee. This seems less like a comedy special and more like a tour of Nashville
with a funny
with a comedic
person.
Bent, like a comedian doing the tour.
Got it.
So
okay.
I think that is comedy on a bus, but not a comedy special.
Because you would argue that every tour guide from TMZ to everything is doing comedy on a bus.
Yes.
But no one has taped their comedy special on a bus where you are, right.
And that would still be a tour, not a special.
Exactly.
I think that's the distinction.
And you're right. There are real facts. That's a thing. We are doing a full-on show.
Yes.
All right. So I feel like
I think you got
your
it.
All right, good.
I think you got it.
And if you guys would like to see it, you can go check out Vimeo or crashtestshow.com. It's only $3.99. This is like a big passion project for Rob and I. Like, we have kind of done this fairly independently. So it's been really cool to do. So we'll see if people like
it. And it's out now or it's coming out soon.
Yes.
It's coming
out
on the 18th on Vimeo, but you can
pre-order it now.
Yeah.
Okay. Go to Crash Test Show or just Vimeo, whatever is easy for you.
Wonderful. Then you got How Did This Get Made?
How Did This Get Made is coming. It's always gone. It's not coming back. The League is coming back this September for 7th and final season. Fresh Off the Boat is coming back. And right now, I have a very small part in a few, maybe like two episodes of Wet Hot American Summer, first day of camp.
Can't wait.
Yeah. And it just came out the day we're recording. Yes. I believe it was released.
At the stroke of midnight.
Yes, it was released. And I am an employee of Rock and Roll Magazine.
Amazing.
It's really super, super fun.
My fave mag. Mm. Can't wait to read the recaps of the show.
Yeah, they have great recaps.
Yeah.
Wonderful. I like it.
Awesome.
Watch those things. And,
I learned a lot from you guys. Yeah. Thank you for validating our claim. Yeah. I'm very excited.
That's exciting. And they can find you online at Paul Scheer.
At Paul Scheer. Pretty much across the board, and every iteration is at Paul Scheer.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Okay. And if you guys want to talk to the show, guess what? You're in luck. We're on Twitter and social media as well. On Twitter, we are at TWL Podcast. You can shoot us an email at todaywelearnpodcast@gmail.com. And we're also on Facebook, Today We Learn with Razzle and Dan. But if you want a more personal touch, and why wouldn't you? You can also find us on Twitter personally. I am at OsteoFerocious across most social medias. And
I am at My Name is Razzle 2 on Twitter. And on Instagram, My Name is Razzle.
Nice.
Yeah.
And once again, thank you for all the kind words you've left on iTunes and on the website. We really appreciate it. You guys are rad. And another plug I want to get in there.
Sure.
My book, 100 Things Avengers Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die, still available wherever fine books are sold.
I want to read that.
Yeah, it's great. Just leave it on top of the in the restroom, read a chapter 100 times later, you'll be done.
I'm very excited. Yeah. That's 100 poops.
Yeah. that was the original working title.
100 bowel movements.
Yeah. And my follow-up, 100 Things About Star Wars, 100 Things Star Wars Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die, is coming out this November. It's available for pre-order now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Triumph Books.
I can't wait.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's as they say, is that.
Do that. And as always, check out my other podcasts on Paul's network, Wolf Pop.
Yeah, Wolf Pop.
Yeah, Picking Favorites. Check that out, most of you do, as it is. Be awesome to each other. And we appreciate everybody for listening the last few years, and continue to listen. And give us good ratings on iTunes and all that jazz, and tell your friends and tweet about it. And as always.
Clam, you dig it? Yes, we clam.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.